Vietnamese photographer Nick Ut once told Hal Buell, "I saw the one old lady carry the one-year-old boy and baby die in her hand. Then I see about five children run right at my camera, and she cries, 'Help, help.'" He was relating the story behind one of the most famous war photographs of all time, a young girl naked among a group of children burned and fleeing a 1972 napalm attack in Vietnam. The photo is part of a new collection published by the Associated Press in Abrams, and many of those images can be seen at the Stephen Kasher Gallery on West 23rd Street in Chelsea until November 30th. The book is called Vietnam, The Real War, Photographic History by the Associated Press. Pete Hamill wrote its introduction, and he joins us again along with Hal Buell, who was executive news photo editor at AP during the height of the Vietnam War, and Santiago Leong, who is vice president and director of photography at the AP today. I'm very pleased to welcome all of you back to our show.
Good.
So what happened to that girl in that photograph? Is she still alive? Has she recovered from the burns?
She is still alive. She lives in Toronto. She is runs a company that talks about innocents who are caught in war and tries and makes a great effort to end war, of course, and also to protect the innocents.
And she's recovered from the burns?
She still suffers some pain, but she gets around quite a bit. She travels extensively.
How much of the AP's photo library from Vietnam is represented in this book? Is this the cream of the crop?
It took me some years ago 8 weeks to look at all the frames that we have in our files in New York. I would be reluctant to estimate, but there are tens of thousands of pictures from the war.
And there are many books on Vietnam, including some by photographers represented in this book, like Horst Voss and Tim Page. Are the photos in this book exclusively ones by AP photographers?
Yes, they're all by AP photographers or stringers who work for the AP.
Not the soldiers who probably took
pictures. To my knowledge, there are no soldier pictures in there.
Pete, do you know if any conflict has been captured more completely in photographic images than Vietnam?
No American conflict, that's for sure. And none probably will ever again be covered the same way, where you had, as a reporter or a photographer, access to the battlefield where you really could go. You didn't have to be embedded. You know, didn't have to agree not to show blood or violent death. You could have nice, clean war pictures, which is what we get now. It was a unique and strange and interesting period because of that.
Now, Santiago, there are things that photography can't capture. Is that why we are seeing it replaced more and more by video these days?
I think photography still has a lot of power, even in this world of video. I think what to take up on what Pete was alluding to, now it's a lot more about access and difficulties around access and a recognition by people that they can aspire to controlling the media space and influence the message through controlling journalists more tightly.
Now, why do you think that wasn't done during Vietnam? Some people actually blame people who supported the war, blame the media for the fact that the war became so unpopular, along with the draft, of course.
I think nowadays the flow of information is so much broader and faster, in part or entirely perhaps due to the internet, that people are able to see the results of their attempts to control the media or give access much more quickly. And as a result, they attempt to manipulate things in a more aggressive way.
Although we saw more openness in the Arab Spring, for example, than we've seen in coverage of our wars in Afghanistan and Iraq.
I think the Arab Spring, a lot of those revolutions were inspired by social media and used social media to drive the message. And so for those particular cases, we did get a lot of access and we were able to photograph and document a lot of things. However, when you look at, for example, what's going on in Syria today, access is extraordinarily problematic and is very complicated and very risky, and it's a different ballgame.
And you also have to question who is sending the image, because you can't always trust some images.
There's a lot of what we call user-generated content or citizen journalism that's being provided by people who clearly have an agenda. It's important to describe it as such.
Now, before we move on, have I been mispronouncing your name? Isn't it Lyon?
Lyon, yes.
Even though you're born in Spain?
That's right. Born in Spain, raised in Ireland, to American parents. It's complicated.
Pete, you were born in Park Slope, or what is now called Park Slope, but didn't you go to Vietnam for the New York Post?
I did, yeah.
Just in time for Christmas 1965. How long were you there?
I was there about 6 weeks, which was long for Dorothy Schiff's New York Post. You know, they didn't have somebody in Queens for 6 weeks.
because the money was so tight.
Yeah, it was in seventh in circulation out of seven newspapers at the time.
Now, you didn't, or did you accompany troops on their missions? Was it all that different from being embedded?
No, I went out with Marines in the north in Da Nang. I went out in Pleiku, near Pleiku, and in the central part of Vietnam, and also down in the Delta. You could pick and choose where you decided to go. You went to the airport and saw what planes were around, and you say, I'm going to go on that one. They said, okay, hop on. And off you went, not knowing what on earth might await you. My trick was always to find somebody who had fought in Korea, that knew how to stay alive when people are shooting at you, and tell him to keep me alive.
Now, did you know any of the photographers that are represented in this book?
Yeah, I knew Eddie Adams fairly well, up in Da Nang mainly, because the Marines were up there, and Eddie loved the Marines. I met the other guys, Horst Foss, and I met Malcolm Brown. Most people were so busy, because at the AP they were also what we now would call multitasking. You know, Peter Arnett would write the story but also take some photographs. Eddie Adams would take photographs and also send notes for a possible story. So it wasn't a simple just show up and give us headshots. It wasn't that. Nobody knew.
Hal, did you ever go to Vietnam yourself?
Yes, I was Asia photo editor for a number of years and was down in Vietnam in the early 60s when it was not an all-out war at that time, but returned to New York in 63 just in time to handle the Burning Monk picture when it came in, which is a picture, of course, that put the Vietnam story on the front pages where it stayed for 10 years.
You probably had a bigger budget than Dorothy Schiff at the New York Post. How many photographers did the AP have in covering the war?
Well, I won't compare our budget with others, but we always had 8 or 9 people on the staff, and it was headed up by a photographer named Horst Foss, who was not only a superior photographer but a brilliant editor.
And those days, of course, before the internet, these pictures were shot on film, and then shipped back to the U.S.? How much of a lag was there between the time the picture was taken and the time that you actually could make it available to newspapers and magazines?
The hot pictures moved out of Saigon by radio photo. We had our own transmission equipment, and we would hook up phone calls by radio signal, and they were received in various places like Manila, Tokyo, and relayed on to New York. So the hot pictures came through very quickly, like the Saigon execution, like Nick Gutt's picture referred to, the Burning Monk. And that was supplemented by shipments from New York. And those pictures would lag a couple of days. But daily, we would bring in 4 or 5 or 6, 7 pictures by radio.
Did you ever direct the photographers, or were they just simply left to their own devices?
The direction of photographers on a daily basis was done by Horst Voss here and the crew there, and he would send them out on assignments. Pete was talking about how easy it was to get to the war. Your listeners might be interested in embedded. When a photographer is embedded today, he's committed for 10 days, whatever the time limit is. And if something happens on the other side of the mountain, he can't get there. And in Vietnam, if something happened on the other side of the mountain, he just got in a helicopter and went there.
Santiago, how does it work today? Of course, you get instant images from anyone, but what are the limitations today?
Well, nowadays, the technology allows us to get images from the field even faster than in the time of Vietnam. Satellite technology, portable satellite technology, a photographer can be essentially on or very close to the battlefield and be providing an almost continuous stream of live imagery. And, of course, it's the volume of the imagery has increased exponentially almost. So if we were getting 7 or 8 top pictures a day from Vietnam, now from stories we're getting 70 or 80 pictures a day. Mm. So it's everything has been ramped up in terms of speed and volume.
You were in Spain at the time when Saigon fell in 1975?
I would have been in Ireland aged all of 9 years old.
Do you remember whether any photography from Vietnam made an impression on you?
Yes, there? Certainly. My father, who was a wire service journalist and worked for the AP for a time, I remember visiting the AP bureau in Madrid in Spain where he lived and seeing Eddie Adams' execution picture on the wall as a young boy and just being shocked by it and not fully understanding it, but recognizing that it was something extraordinarily powerful.
There were Vietnamese photographers working for the American press, like Nick Ut, and others were working for North Vietnam. Did we get to see any of those pictures?
Some pictures came to us that were picked up, that were transmitted also by radio, by Hanoi, by the Vietnamese news agency, and we would take those and use them and describe where they came from. But from Vietnam itself, that is South Vietnam, it was rare indeed to find a picture made by a North Vietnamese.
Well, is there a noticeable difference in the approach when people were in support of the war or were opposed to the war? I mean, can you see sometimes a photographer's biases?
I don't believe that in the case of Vietnam there was a photographic bias, certainly not in our AP pictures. The pictures you see in the book, The Real War, it are pictures that photographers made because that's what they saw, and not because it had a particular message to it other than what was going on, which was a battle or the horror of war or the results of war.
My guests are Hal Buell, Santiago Lyon, and Pete Hamill. We're talking about a book called Vietnam, The Real War, a photographic history by the Associated Press. Pete wrote the introduction. Pete, you talked about staying with somebody who was who knew how to survive, but it was dangerous, wasn't it, especially for photographers? In 1965, the photojournalist Dickie Chappelle became the first war correspondent to be killed in action and the first woman killed in action any time in any war. Was she working for the AP?
No, not at that time.
Well, I think she did some freelance.
She maybe did some freelance for us. But
she supported U.S. involvement in Vietnam. Did you hear about the opinions of the journalists and the photojournalists at the time? Did they let you know? Because a number, I remember David Halberstam coming on the show and saying, I went to Vietnam in support of the war, and very quickly I decided I was opposed to the war.
Well, the pictures, as I said before, pictures reflected what happened. And it was hard, it would be hard to put bias to a photograph, at least in my judgment. Words sometimes can be twisted a little bit, but the pictures are what they are, and I never heard a photographer do anything but express the horror of what they see and were turned off by the violence of the war.
Unlike,
for example, Eddie Adams, who took the famous photograph of the general executing the prisoner. Hmm.
By the way, he was on this show.
Yeah.
And, of course, I asked him the question that people ask him all the time. Couldn't you have stopped that or any of the other horrors that you saw? And they felt that their job, first and foremost, was to be to document what was going on.
Well,
But he though, to go back to the earlier point, he was a huge supporter of the Marines. He had been a Marine. He had been in Korea. He might not have supported the war, but he could have supported the soldiers to make sure people understood these were humans, our young people, being paid $95 a month as draftees to go out and fight this war, the purpose of which was never adequately explained by anybody, by Jack Kennedy or by Lyndon Johnson, or later by Nixon. So
the domino theory, I think, was the usual reason.
Yeah, you know? and that could have. I heard that from Dean Rusk saying, "We either fight them here, or we fight them in Los Angeles," at some press conference he had. It was absurd. We needed an NSA so we could get all the information we needed, whether it
and
was
more.
And more.
The idea of photographer trying to stop something happening, in the case of Eddie, that happened in a cat's wink of an eye. There's no way he could have stopped that. But photographers many times did participate by helping with the wounded, getting them on helicopters. In Nick Gutt's case, he put down his cameras and took Kim Fook to a hospital where she was survived instead of dying on the highway. So photographers in that sense were involved.
I have to take a little break, but I want to remind my listeners that my guests are Hal Buell, who was executive news photo editor at the Associated Press during the height of the Vietnam War, Santiago Lyon, who is vice president and director of photography at the AP Today, and Pete Hamill, who wrote the introduction to a new gorgeous, it's hard to say gorgeous considering how many shocking photographs there are in here, but a gorgeous collection of photographs called Vietnam, The Real War, a Photographic History by the Associated Press. It's published by Abrams, and we will continue our conversation after we take this break. And we are back with Pete Hamill, who wrote the introduction to a new fabulous collection of photographs called Vietnam, The Real War, a Photographic History by the Associated Press. Also with us is Hal Buell, who was the photographic editor at AP at the time these pictures were taken, and Santiago Lyon, who is vice president and director of photography at the AP Today. The book is published by Abrams. Henri Huet, how do I pronounce that? Huet?
Way, yeah.
He photographed Dickie Chappelle as she was being administered last rites shortly before she died. And then he also died in a crash in 1971. How many photographers or journalists died in Vietnam?
Horst Voss and Tim Page edited a book called Requiem, which collected the photos of 135 photographers who died in the two Vietnams, the French War and the American War. It's a stunning book published 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, Robert Capa died in the French,
War.
Vietnam War.
Just a couple of days after Dien Bien Phu.
And didn't he say that if you don't get, what was he exactly? Say, quote, if your pictures aren't good enough, you're not close enough.
That was his motto. That's right.
Well, of course, that means he was putting himself into the line of fire all the time. It's amazing that he survived the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah. Or the invasion of Normandy.
One of the images in the book is a request to you, Hal, for camera equipment to replace what was lost when Huey's chopper went down. What was it like for you knowing that you were asking photographers to put themselves into harm's way?
Well, that's a really difficult question. You feel a little guilty about it. On the other hand, photographers stand in line to volunteer for those kinds of assignments. So there's a combination of helping a photographer make great pictures played against the danger that you're allowing the photographer to get into.
Unlike conscripted soldiers, American photographers chose to be in Vietnam, and Santiago, they choose to be in harm's way today. And you now direct photojournalists in places like Iraq, Afghanistan. Are things all that different today?
I think, if anything, things are more dangerous. The media is increasingly a target of all sorts of individuals and organizations in a way that perhaps it wasn't once upon a time. Again, as a result of this recognition that people can control or think they can control the flow of information.
A number of reporters have told me that in the old days you could say press and people would leave you alone. Now you say press and they shoot at you.
That's right. The first thing you used to do up until at least the late 1980s was put the letters TV in tape and maybe even have a flag on your car and advertise your status as a journalist because people respected it and they gave you some leeway. That's no longer the case.
Pete, in your introduction, you write, if generals too often fought the last war, reporters and photographers were expected to do the same. The generals had been young soldiers in the previous war, but not reporters and photographers. Did that make journalists more likely to trust what they were being told by military commanders?
No, I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was that they brought a sense of the world in which sudden death was part of it, and often indiscriminate. And they had a sense of the land and the terrain and what to look at. Great photographers teach writers how to see, to really see, not just to look or glance, but to see. And I think with the AP, it would have been impossible for someone like me to cover Vietnam without having a stop at the AP office first, which is what I did, where I got Malcolm Brown's memo from somebody and read it, one of the most famous memos of all time, because they brought institutional memory to the coverage of Vietnam. Guys like Arnett were there for 13 years, you know, covering it right down to the that tank drove into the presidential palace.
The amazing thing in looking at these pictures, many of which are all ingrained in our memories, is just how brilliant they are as photographs. Now, I know if I were in the middle of a battle, I probably would take pictures that really are unmemorable. So they also have to think about framing and lighting and all sorts of other things at the same time they're thinking about recording a moment in history.
Well, a lot of that's instinctive to the experienced photographer, but it's not totally instinctive. So what you see in this book, in the subtitle, The Real War, is really a proper subtitle, because that's really what the war looked like, carefully photographed and very widely distributed at the time, and in great volume. That's really what made the difference in Vietnam, was the volume.
Well, Santiago, one of the most famous images of the Iraq War may be that hooded prisoner at Abu Ghraib standing on a box being tortured with electrodes attached to his hands. But that was taken by an American soldier.
That's right. It is astonishing that the memorable image from that conflict, or one of the memorable images, was taken by a combatant. I think in Iraq, getting back to what we were talking about earlier about the level of control, when you think about Iraq, a country the size of California roughly, with at one time 150,000 U.S. troops on the ground, yet a relatively small number of embedded journalists, maybe a dozen, two dozen at any one time, which means the odds of coming across something truly dramatic or monumental were quite small. And when you look at the Iraq coverage, there were many great pictures, don't get me wrong, but few really iconic images.
How have digital photography and Photoshop changed things?
Well, digital photography in and of itself is a good thing in that it saves time and gets the information, the visual information out there. I think what's increasingly worrisome is the use of Photoshop to manipulate pictures and the subsequent detection of that manipulation and all of that sort of thing.
Because then it makes people mistrust.
It does. And that's why, for example, at the AP and many other news organizations, there's really a zero tolerance policy around manipulation that deliberately misleads the viewer.
A single image or a video can go viral in just an hour today. How has the speed of communications changed things?
Well, I think it has. It's left, if anything, a little bit less time to be thoughtful and to be measured. And there's a lot of pressure. Photographers feel a lot of pressure to get the information out almost instantaneously, when in some cases it's a good idea to slow down and to put things into context and allow for a little more room to consider things as opposed to just feeding it in the instant.
Pete, in Dispatches, his book on his experiences in Vietnam, Michael Herr suggested that the true story was lost. He said, there was a story that was as simple as it had always been, men hunting men, a hideous war, and all kinds of victims. If it was true then, do you think that things have changed all that much today?
Driving that primitive sense of combat was an idea. And there's ideas now driving a lot of the religious ideas going back to the 7th century, driving people to blow up at each other's weddings.
Now, we have a slideshow of many of the iconic photos that we've been discussing on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Pete Hamill, Hal Buell, and Santiago Lyon for being on our guest today to talk about Vietnam, The Real War, published by Abrams.